pride. It's all too easy to succumb to pride about my legalists, to look at the shattered relationships they have with their kids and spouses, how many of their kids have truly messed up lives now, and how very few of those meeting-raised kids are in any way associated with the church culture or even believe in God today, how many people's kids don't really get along with them at all, how few new people are coming out to any meeting activities, as far as I know, how few people show up Sunday generally in most of these assemblies, the ones that remain. Thing is, I didn't move away. I teach high school English locally. I go to churches sometimes. I see the children and grandchildren of the local folks I used to go to meeting with every single day of my life. The grandchildren of the main elder behind the Nepean divisions go to the high school where I work. I teach the children of people of whose assemblies I am no longer a member. I help some of them write things, not parody pamphlets, of course, and I affix a numeric value on their writing. I teach them what irony, satire, and parody are, and what they're for. Most are great kids at new churches with no idea what their parents, grandparents, and I went through together. I wouldn't know how to tell them what we all did to one another. And it would make me bashful to show up at their church like some wild man of the woods, feral and shaggy and weird, and their teacher. It's hard to know how to feel about myself. To most local evangelical church people, I'm a victim. A bitter casualty of cultist churches which shouldn't even be allowed to open their doors on Sundays. To others, I'm a threat to church bliss, being negative instead of uplifting, an SH disturber, tearing down the Lord's people, a grievous wolf. To others, I'm an obsessive who needs to drop it. So there's quite a range of options for self-image available to me. In a school, I'm a licensed professional teacher who cares about grammar and can tell you how to use a semicolon and make you write more like an adult. In the assemblies of my own brethren culture, when I come in the door, it's more complicated. To many, I am the crazy man on the internet, the foul, depraved Aleister Crowley Charles Manson figure, or the Michael Bowling for Columbine Moore figure, making anti-status quo stuff that people feel threatened by, but helplessly know their kids have seen on the internet. Yet I'm also missed. Some people kind of wish I'd feel and think and act differently, perhaps, but they're also kind of glad to see me, especially if I'm only passing through. And sometimes, they really sort of ask me to forgive them for their choosing to support the decision to never let me be a member again. Because they're always going to support it. They miss me, but they're never going to take communion with me or invite me to any meetings. And what does a good attitude to this situation look like? I think I know what a bad attitude looks like. Pride. I'm better than they are. They're legalists, and I'm normal. They're under the influence of a cult, and I've been deprogrammed. They're in bondage to human traditions and superstitions and bureaucratic control mechanisms, and I'm free. They're ignorant, and I'm informed. Pride. Ugly and weak. I think I'll try to feel the fact that I'm missed, and that I miss them in return. I think I'll meet people for coffee. I think I will occasionally show up of a Sunday at some of the various bits of assembly shrapnel which resulted from our meeting culture exploding. And I think every time I realize that I feel better than people, I will not feel ashamed, that doesn't fix anything, but will also not take myself seriously enough to support the pride. I will see how childish and silly it is to want to feel proud about anything in this situation. How laughable. What did we mess up? Love. Relationships, connecting, relating, and it's not too late for those. I think, church or not, you have to do relationships on a person-to-person basis. Even in a family, you can't just love all your kids at the same time. You have to deal with each one. So that's how I'm going to have to deal with Christians. Church affiliation doesn't figure into that any way I can see. And we're all messed up, because we're people, human beings. No better, no worse, so we have to let each other know it's okay for others to reveal that sometimes they're messed up. We all are, all the time. And the pride that says it's my job to fix them all and correct their thoughts or speech like I correct their kids' punctuation is ridiculous, something I should never believe. The message of Divided We Stand was, these divisions, this fighting, is silly and needless, and I stand behind that today. And the Bible tells us what would have prevented it. Love. The fruit of the Spirit. Recognizing the works of the flesh for what they are and judging them. You can't cure the works of the flesh with only your natural capacities, your flesh. But you can stop taking yourself so seriously. Stop feeling righteous when you're doing the works of the flesh. You can start feeling that you need God. It would be utterly pointless and self-deluding to create yet another position or view purporting to tell which side was right or that both sides were wrong and only I was right. Another one of those "we're right" things simply doesn't need to be made. Bruce Anstey, Paul Christianese, and others have that well and truly covered. Despite the clear South Park inspiration of my cartoon, I was trying to do South Park at its least adolescent and childish. South Park, when the piano music starts and Kyle makes a valid, clear point.
You know, Stan, we learned something today.
And my point about our apparent inability to love one another properly, about our fighting, our need to control, our prideful needing to be right, was that it was all so transparent that anyone looking on from a small distance could see it, that people did see it, and that it was embarrassing and silly. Because it just is, especially every single time we do it again. And we do keep doing it again, on the personal level, and from time to time, globally. We'd rather divide than connect. Rather diss Bruce Anstey than try to see eye to eye with him. Some people get very angry with me, and everything I write, and my cartoon, and all of it. And that's the response that tempts me to feel pride, because one assumes that those people feel like their sacred cows are being pointed out as idols. Like I am trying to make something heroic and terribly serious and important, like meeting divisions and deciding who is right, even if it tears us all to pieces, seem needless and silly. Because I was, and I am, and I'm tempted to feel proud about getting to them. But I don't want to be that person either. So I guess, with this book, as with that cartoon, I'll shoot for "we're ridiculous" and "it was all very needless and sad what we did. Let's stop doing stuff like that." We messed up love and tolerance and relationships, failed to show the fruit of the Spirit in any way sufficient to keep us from instead displaying the least fun works of the flesh. It's just something we did in those embarrassing decades. None of us was able to stop it. And inside us still, we are very tempted to want to control and correct everything supposedly Christ-related anywhere near us. We want to form sides, like the game we are playing is football or war. But the game we are to be playing is relationship, and we Christian groups have the most embarrassing divorces of all. We have nothing to be proud of. We need to stop claiming to be in some especially scriptural, elevated ecclesiastical position. I don't expect many to see the effort I put into gathering the quotes and writing this book and putting it out there and putting up with the flack from it to be an act of love. Love for my people, love for my God, but try to think of it that way for just a moment. Envy. Pride isn't the only deadly sin that beckons to survivors of legalistic systems. I know what it's like to go to a Bible conference that I wasn't supposed to go to and hear sermons given which sound quite self-satisfied and complacent to me, to have people walk up and advise me to talk to elders who haven't returned a call or any correspondence since the 20th century. I know what it is to be single and childless and see all the happy families and pregnant ladies. I know what it's like to see guys my age speaking and running their assemblies and being called Mr. by younger people and having their sermons put in the net as MP3s and generally get spoken of with respect. I know what it's like to have to leave because it's supper time and I was told I wasn't welcome to eat there. And what does a good attitude to this situation look like? I think I know what a bad attitude looks like. Envy, resentment, feeling like a victim. I think the answer there is just not meeting up with them on their own turf anymore. It's back to basics. Seeing who will agree to meet me, somewhere else, for coffee. It's seeing who will text or chat or Facebook or whatever. Seeing what connections can be forged on a person-to-person level. I can't worship with you? Can I buy you dinner? Are you doing okay? What's going on for you this week? And really, there is no better revenge on people who seem to have been willing to destroy one's ecclesiastical life than to live well, to find satisfaction and enjoyment in Christian things, in everything. I've seen resentful people who've been kicked out of a brethren culture who then lose their grip on hope, trust, God, the Bible, and everything, who never go to other churches to see what's going on in them, who lie down and take victimhood and whine about it and need to be told to shut up all the time, who never look inside themselves and see the same correct and control they suffered under in there, itching to be applied to others. I think playing the victim is a form of envy, just as shame is disappointed pride. and I am accused of playing the victim every time I even try to talk with anyone or publish anyone's thoughts or feelings about the other side of Brethren culture. And every time someone wants me to shut up, they can just accuse me of that and call me bitter, negative. And I think it's very important not to actually be those things in the eyes of God. And some days, that's a bit beyond me. I guess what's worked, when it's worked, is to look for success elsewhere, to stop believing that God needs some church culture or other if he wants to bless me or use me, to move on from the conviction that God wouldn't or couldn't make me thrive except within a church culture, to learn that if a church kicked me out or doesn't want to include me today, this doesn't interfere with God blessing me, that the whole debacle was, in fact, a blessing in itself. It put me into shock, being torn up by the cultural roots and tossed to one side like that. But my life wasn't over, even if I didn't recreate my Brethren culture by joining or starting a replacement version of it. Briefly put, if I get things from God and notice them and am grateful, I won't be plagued by envy or feelings of victimhood, exclusion, or loss. Same thing if I can help in any way, shed any light, provide any comfort. I'll have stuff going on. So that's what I want. Enemies. This book is about how, in the Bible, Jesus seems to be constantly attacking the legalists of his time, the Pharisees, over and over and over, by name. But I don't think he was really attacking them, not as people. I think it only looks like that. I think he wanted to make very sure that his own message wasn't mixed in with or confused for theirs. Because his message was pure. Theirs, like ours, was just human. His was the opposite to theirs. His was about inner transformation from God. Theirs was about the outer appearance of piety. The two are incompatible. They are at odds. Either you focus on letting God align your inner self to match his, or you focus on maintaining the appearance and reputation of piety yourself through religion. We aren't Jesus. Even if we're quoting him directly, we are just human beings. We have agendas other than his tainting what we're doing, agendas of correction and control. In many ways, we are copies of copies of copies of Christians long dead rather than conduits for the living Christ. Were legalists my enemies? Are they still? I think they took on that role from time to time. I think when they spied on me and my friends and tarnished our reputations and spread lies and warned people not to associate with or date us, and then eventually informed the culture globally that we were to be barred from all meeting activities, that they took on the role of enemies. They messed up my life as best they could. But I think now a lot of it is up to me. Today, I can view them how I like, and I don't see the point in viewing them as enemies. Every time I talk to a Brethren person my age who says he or she misses me and would love me to visit some weekend, I ask if I would, under any circumstances, be allowed to break bread on Sunday morning with them, when we, of course, go to meeting. Because they always go to meeting. Many of them run their assemblies. And it kind of turns over that old rock. And there's still stuff squirming around wetly under there. I can see the squirming in their body language and gaze, the wobble in their voice. What has happened every single time is they've gotten very blushy and awkward. They told me no, that I know that, and that it's not up to them, even if the meeting is in their living room and there's no one there but their own family, that it's not their fault, that there's nothing they can do, that they are obligated to exclude me from answering the Lord's dying request. I think at that point, it's up to me to view them as enemies or victims. So I view them as victims, trapped in something, obligated to something, something I really understand, something that has roots twisting all through them just like it did me, something designed to control people, something God intervened in to keep me from growing up to enforce myself one day. Problem with that is it's hard not to be tempted to feel superior, to feel freer, to feel able to follow my own convictions. But I think it's important not to view them as enemies, even if they PM me on Facebook to tell me everything that's wrong with me, even if they warn Christians not to talk to me, even if they sometimes still interfere in my life and the lives of people I care about, the Bible is pretty unflinching as to how to treat enemies. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had this to say on the subject.
Now that is the final reason I think that Jesus says, love your enemies. It is this. that love has within it a redemptive power. And that is a power there that eventually transforms individuals. That's why Jesus says, love your enemies. Because if you hate your enemies, you have no way to redeem and to transform your enemies. But if you love your enemies, you will discover that at the very root of love is the power of redemption. You just keep loving people and keep loving them, even though they are mistreating you. Here's a person who is a neighbor, and this person is doing something wrong to you, and all of that. Just keep being friendly to that person. Keep loving them. Don't do anything to embarrass them. Just keep loving them, and they can't stand it too long. Oh, they react in many ways in the beginning. They react with bitterness because they are mad because you love them like that. They react with guilt feelings, and sometimes they'll hate you a little more at that transition period, but just keep loving them. And by the power of your love, they will break down under the load. That's love, you see. It is redemptive. And this is why Jesus says love. There's something about love that builds up and is creative. There is something about hate that tears down and is destructive. So love your enemies.
Love is the cure for legalism and legalists, both being them and dealing with them. It's redemptive. It's how God's redemption works in us, loving you and loving them as God loves all of us. And this is really important. Loving your enemies isn't a human thing. It's beyond us. It's a Christian thing, in the literal sense of the word. It is inspired by Christ. It is the fruit of the Holy Spirit working in us. So it's something we should aspire to if we want to ever tell anyone we're Christians. But we won't get to it by rules or vows. It's not enough to be good church people fitting that Christian image. We have to be transformed in the image of Christ inwardly, and we don't do that to ourselves.